Welcome to Banfield. I'm Brian Enten in for Ashley tonight. Our top story is another multi-decade prison term for sex trafficking. A day after Jeffrey Epstein's former right-hand woman was sentenced to 20 years, the R&B star R. Kelly got 30 years for sexually abusing and brutalizing underage girls and boys and young women. A federal judge in New York said the case was all about violence and cruelty and control, and Kelly leaves a trail of broken lives in his wake. Once one of the top music stars in the country, if not the entire world, Kelly faces another trial, this time in Chicago in August, for allegedly luring minors into sex acts and producing child pornography. Seven victims spoke today at Kelly's New York sentencing. R. Kelly did not. There are some other rich and powerful men who are very, very nervous tonight, all of them holding their breath, waiting to see whether or not they will be outed as members of the Epstein Eight. Those are the eight men who were involved with Jeffrey Epstein, flew in his private plane, stayed in his lavish estates, and maybe knew about his sex trafficking of underage women. May have even slept with some of those very women. Epstein's former girlfriend and top lieutenant, Ghislaine Maxwell, was sentenced to 20 years in prison yesterday for playing a pivotal role in that sex trafficking operation. She's been accused of grooming vulnerable girls as young as 14 for Epstein and keeping a meticulous little black book of the rich and famous people who Epstein dealt with. In February, one of those men, Prince Andrew, settled a sexual abuse lawsuit with Virginia Giuffre, who says she was groomed and trafficked by Epstein and Maxwell. Eight other powerful men were named by Giuffre in that lawsuit against the prince, a lawsuit that is still tonight totally sealed. There have been reports that the names include billionaires, dignitaries, and high-profile U.S. politicians, maybe even a former president. We know Donald Trump and Bill Clinton had very close personal relationships with Epstein. Melinda Gates has said Bill Gates' work with the abhorrent Epstein led to her seeking an end to her 27-year marriage. And billionaire Leon Black stepped down as chief executive of Apollo Global Management after an investigation revealed he had large payments. He made large payments. We're talking over $50 million to Epstein himself. Until now, the actual names of the Epstein Eight have been kept under wraps, but that could be about to change. Last night, Brad Edwards appeared on this show. He is the attorney who represents more than 50 of Epstein's victims. Here's what he said to me about when we could learn those names.
There were certain individuals who various victims were linked out to here and there. And you're going to hear some of those names, probably not because of this, as much as because of the Adult Victim Act that just passed. So there are people associated with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell in their orbit who are shaking their boots right now because they know at the very least civil suits are coming. And we've already seen what happened in this case. The criminal indictments came as a consequence of civil lawsuits. So you're going to learn more over time. You're going to start finding out towards the end of the year, if not by the feds, by civil lawsuits being finally outside of the statute of limitations able to be filed. So that's the first time that you're going to hear, probably October, November of this year. And then names are going to start trickling out. Some of those names, we've had the black book for a while. So some of those names we do know.
You heard him say it, men right now, powerful men shaking in their boots. It's not just Epstein, Maxwell and the victims who know the names of the men who might be on that list. Epstein's former friends and business associates also have a pretty good idea. Earlier, I had the chance to speak with Christina Oxenberg. She is a former acquaintance of Epstein and Maxwell and a second cousin of Prince Andrew. She's also the author of the book Trash, Encounters with Ghislaine Maxwell. It was really a wild, wild conversation we had this afternoon. Here's some of what she told me in this exclusive interview.
Do you think we'll ever find out the names? And do you have any idea who they are?
Well, I think we know the names. I think the names have been bandied around from the beginning. I don't know that it's necessary for me to actually say them. We do know what we know who they are. They are former presidents. They are a very mouthy lawyer who lives in Boston. There, we know the names. They're on the flight logs. They're in the little black book. They're the ones who've been surrounding this whole story for, we know who they are. However, are they more responsible than Guylaine? This gets very gray area, you know, and I am not a victim, so I'm going to see things differently.
But even if they're not more responsible, if they were still a participant at times with some of these girls, shouldn't their names be made public?
Okay, well, the answer, of course, is yes to everything. Of course, everything should be public. Everything should be transparent, and all bad people should be punished. I'm all for it. This is, you know, sex rings have gone on forever. This is not new. It's not. It's nothing to do with privilege and money. This happens in every iteration. It's happened through all the years humans have been on the planet, probably. And this particular group was to satisfy Jeffrey's proclivity for underage girls. And that's the problem with the whole thing. If Jeffrey had just wanted beautiful young ladies, there's no problem, but he liked children. And so that's the conundrum. And when you talk about the other men who were involved, and obviously we know their names, I've read the flight logs, I'm sure you have too. Now, since 1993, I knew that she and Jeffrey used a private plane because that was another instance where I spent 3 months with them, if you can believe it. And they were on the plane every weekend. So I knew about the plane. And in 97, in this crazy meeting, she says to me, sorry, my tenses are always wrong. She says to me, the plane is hooked up with audio and video. And we have everyone on tape. Her words. Her words. I'm not asking a thing. Why is she eliciting things that in years to come would be massively incriminating? So no, I didn't think to ask, well, who do you mean by everyone? When she said we have everyone on tape, I figured she meant anyone who wouldn't want to be on tape.
Where do you think all those tapes are now?
I think for one thing, there's certainly more than one copy of anything. I think that since those were the days of videotapes, it's 97, they must have also been updated in all of the techno, you know, changes right. that have happened, right? So those would have been done, and there's definitely more than one. There would obviously have been more than one copy. And she said it, her clear intention was, we have the upper hand, we have the compromat.
Now that yes. she's been sentenced and she's on her way to permanent stay in federal prison for 20 years, do you think she's going to start naming names? Do you think she's going to tell people where those tapes are? Do you think she's going to come clean about this stuff?
I think all the deals have already been made. I don't know anything. This is just my hunch. I think the deals have been made already, and that's why she's alive. Because Jeffrey died on August 10th in the morning. But on August 9th, which was a Friday, his lawyer came out on the steps of the courthouse, I suppose, and said, Jeffrey's going to start naming names. And he was dead in the morning.
I mean, crazy. Do you think she's at risk right now? Do you think her safety?
No, I don't. Because, I mean, she may want to self-harm. That I cannot speak for. But no, I think the deals have already been made, and she is being rewarded already. Of the 20 years that you mentioned for her sentence, already two have been taken off because of time served. So we're now down to, it's being whittled down. Also, So she's going to be transferred to the UK to complete.
You think that will really happen?
100% I think that. And if I'm wrong, I'll eat all sorts of hats. But I do believe that will happen. And that once she's there, she'll just sail out back door.
Christina, you say this stuff and my jaw drops. I mean, you understand this world much better than me, obviously. Is there just that many powerful people behind the scenes doing secret things, looking out for her? I mean, what is going on?
Well, when you say, why doesn't she out the list? Why would she? They're all on the same team. They're helping her.
Pretty crazy to think that there are all these people, according to her, helping Ghislaine behind the scenes right now. Powerful people, a lot of jaw-dropping claims made there. I want to bring in two other people who know a lot about the Epstein case. Joshua Schiffer is a criminal attorney. His law firm represented one of Epstein's victims, and Hillary Fordwich is a British Royals commentator. Josh, I want to start with you. You just heard my interview with Christina Oxenberg. She talks about the other men, the powerful men who maybe be outed in all of this. But one thing she told me that wasn't included in that clip is she said she believes that those men, for the most part, may have had sex with girls who were not underage, girls who may have been 19 or 20 years old. If they were right over the legal limit, will that protect them moving forward?
No, not necessarily, because there's a variety of other laws that actually criminalize moving people across state lines and around the country for immoral and indecent purposes. It goes back as far as the Mann Act in 1910 in the United States, which was originally titled the Anti-White Slave Act, but has now been expanded to pretty much cover anyone that is moving a woman across state lines, and the U.S. Virgin Islands would fall into that jurisdiction, for immoral or indecent purposes. And it's a great catch-all law. Juries respond to it really well. The Department of Justice uses it extensively, and it absolutely would apply to people being involved in an organization involving bringing these women to a private island to have sex with them, regardless of their age.
That may explain why many of these men might be nervous tonight. Hillary, I want to ask you, you heard Christina Oxenberg suggest, and this really blew my mind, that there is a deal in the background, she believes, with powerful people who have told Ghislaine if she stays quiet, they will get her out of the United States, get her transferred back to the UK, where she'll be in some kind of luxury prison there and eventually get out. Do you think that's really possible, Hillary?
Well, Brian, right now, of course, that's speculation, but anything is possible. And it begs the question for anybody, why has she remained quiet? She has not divulged any specifics or any details. And yes, she does have those tapes. We know that. I think what's very interesting, though, to consider is that Lady Victoria Hervey, she is a former girlfriend of Prince Andrew. She has been on air claiming Prince Andrew's absolute innocence and saying that the photographer who took the photograph, the now infamous photograph of Prince Andrew with Virginia Giuffre in that apartment building with, yeah, you're showing it now with Ghislaine Maxwell in the background, that was a very badly photoshopped photograph. Of course, Prince Andrew couldn't come out and defend himself. So the question also becomes, why on earth did Prince Andrew settle for those nearly $12 million with Virginia Giuffre? Of course, in a jubilee, of course, for his mother. Again, speculation, but yes, you're absolutely right. There are very many powerful men, powerful and rich beyond any comprehension, that absolutely don't want anything out there, and they can pull all sorts of international strings.
Josh, Christina was very clear with me. She thinks if she had already started talking, if Ghislaine had spoken and given the names, that she would be dead by now. She thinks the only reason Ghislaine is alive is because she's stayed quiet. What do you think about that, Josh?
It's absolutely reasonable. We're not talking about normal people. When you get to the levels of power and influence, the whole world changes when you get up in this stratospheric level. And that's why everything still is on the table. Would anybody else be considered for an international, basically prisoner exchange with one of our favorite international allies, the UK? No, not in a million years, but it's absolutely possible for some of her support team to set this up as basically a political prosecution, especially consider the people involved. And that is exactly how governments get together, make some sausage in the back room, split Solomon's baby, and people get freed, moved, changed. Situations are always amenable if there's enough political will and power behind the movement. That's the real question. We all have strong suspicions and knowledge about the Epstein Eight. There's also additional people that I believe are undisclosed. She holds, that being Ghislaine, immense power to affect her current sentence of 20 years by offering to share or use that information. And she could be biding her time until this theoretical promise of transfer materializes. But as soon as she gives up those names, she gives up her power, and then she's no good to anyone. So she has one more big shot. She's going to make the most of it.
And Christina made the point to me today, look, this is in the headlines now. Everyone's talking about it. She said, you just watch. A year or two from now, when it's out of the headlines, it's going to be secret, and Ghislaine is going to end up in the UK. Hillary, how will people in Britain feel about this? What do they think about Ghislaine? What will they think if she suddenly shows up there?
Well, Brian, no one can speak for the entire nation of Great Britain at all, but I will speculate. Obviously, I'll give you some facts on this. With regard to Prince Andrew, the city of York, there was a movement to remove his keys to the city. They don't even want him using that title anymore, Duke of York. So I think that gives you an indication. Also, Prince Andrew used to be within the top 10 in terms of popularity, and a YouGov poll has him at the very bottom. So with that poll and the people of the city of York, I think you've got two data points there. Also, the royal family tends not to, unlike him, have bad judgment. And the good judgment was to make sure that he didn't appear at any of the Jubilee events. He was not on the balcony. He was not at St. Paul's Cathedral. He was absent from everything to do with the Queen's Jubilee. And that was because, of course, they want to keep him out of the spotlight.
Josh, let me ask you, we hear about these secret tapes that Ghislaine and Jeffrey were recording these powerful men on the plane, audio and video, and that these recordings have been duplicated and exist. Would those be admissible in court? What do you think about these recordings, Josh?
Absolutely. As long as, especially in civil court, the government is often in criminal court allowed to use discovery or discoverable information that it obtained through otherwise illegitimate means, or they were created through illegitimate means, as long as the government acquired them legitimately. Same in the civil arena for lawsuits for damages. You're allowed to bring in all kinds of evidence. You still have to prove its validity, where it comes from, but it's not about the admissibility as much as the weight that a jury will place on it. And juries adore audio and videotapes. That would be the most effective evidence that anyone could produce, and it's plenty to basically threaten any of these prominent individuals to use all of their powers to make this case go away. And we're really seeing some of the heat get turned up under their rear ends. These are people worth billions. Their mere words can shake the earth. Any disruption with something like this, it affects thousands, if not millions of people and markets around the world. There's a giant impetus.
Crazy to think about. This impacts people at the highest levels of government and business. And if Christina Oxenberg is right, this is going to take some wild turns in the months and years ahead. We'll stay on it. Josh Schiffer and Hillary Fordwich, thank you for coming on tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, still to come tonight, not many people, even among the richest in human history, can claim to have changed the world. But a man we mentioned earlier, one of Epstein's friends, Bill Gates, he did. And he's not finished trying. After a break, the American oligarch who did very, very well and now wants to do some good despite having a very, very bad year in which he got divorced from his longtime love, was embroiled in the Epstein.
Go to Babbel.com now to start speaking in as little as 3 weeks.
Welcome back. If he lives to be 1,000, Bill Gates will forever be known for the company he dropped out of Harvard for in the mid-1970s, Microsoft. He hasn't actually run Microsoft day-to-day since 2008, and in 2020, he quit the board of directors or was pushed out. More on that coming up in a minute. According to the most recent reports, he now owns just a little over 1% of Microsoft stock, down from 45% when the company first went public in 1986. But the bottom line is Gates is not Mr. Microsoft anymore, but his ambitions, if anything, are bigger. So is his power. Gates and his now former wife control the world's biggest charitable organization, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, aimed at fighting poverty, disease, climate change, and social injustice in more than 100 countries. Gates has given the foundation more than $40 billion of his own money, but according to Bloomberg, he still has $115 billion. That's as of yesterday, the fourth biggest fortune in the entire world. All those dollars and all that influence makes Gates an American oligarch, one of a select few private citizens who can affect the lives of millions directly or indirectly and pull the strings of many a politician and world leader. We think you should know these people because they often don't want you to know much about them at all. What you might not know about Gates is, and this is crazy, I had no idea, he is now America's largest private owner of farmland with almost 270,000 acres. It's not entirely clear what he's doing with it. It's a mystery, and a lot of his neighbors aren't too thrilled about it. He's hinted he might be researching biofuels and more productive seeds. Like his fellow ultra-billionaires, Gates also owns regular land, and lots of it. There's horse ranches in Florida, a Wyoming ranch that once belonged to Buffalo Bill, and an oceanfront estate in San Diego, and also a supermarket-sized mansion in Washington State called Xanadu, worth an estimated $130 million. Gates also owns a chunk of the Four Seasons hotel chain and major stakes in many other companies, ranging from John Deere to AutoNation. It all made for a frightfully expensive divorce this time last year, at least we assume. Unlike the even more expensive divorce of Jeff and Mackenzie Bezos in 2019, the details of Gates' split from Melinda French Gates were kept under wraps. It was secret, and it may have cost him not anything at all. In a divorce petition filed in May 2021, Melinda, who is the one who filed for divorce, reportedly leaving Bill heartbroken, stated that spousal support is not needed and called her marriage to Bill irretrievably broken. All we really know is they still jointly run their foundation, at least for now. We know more about the split itself. Gates has admitted an affair with a Microsoft employee that started in 2000 and got him kicked off the Microsoft board when it came to light many years later. Gates says he quit voluntarily to focus on his charity work. In an interview with CBS back in March, Melinda French Gates wouldn't say whether Gates had other affairs, though it is widely reported that he hit on women constantly, both at Microsoft and at his foundation. She did say that she was disgusted by Gates' association with, guess who? Jeffrey Epstein, whom French Gates called evil personified. Gates has insisted he had no personal friendship or business relationship with Epstein, but says just knowing him was a substantial error in judgment. Soon after that interview, photos surfaced of Bill dancing Paris Hilton style on a banquet. He was at a banquet with a group of attractive women at a Microsoft-sponsored party during the 2010 Sundance Film Festival. At that same party, he was seen high-fiving female friends dancing in his booth and pulling a series of moves, including air guitar, fist pumping, the swim, and the jackhammer. After a break, two guests who know Bill Gates and the legacy he is desperate to leave. We're going to dive into it. Stay with us. It's coming up next. Our oligarch of the hour is Bill Gates, college dropout, software pioneer, one of the five richest people not just in the world, but in human history. Joining us now, Dana Kennedy, national writer for the New York Post, also with us is history, media, and studies and education lecturer, Dr. Nolan Higdon. He's the author of The Anatomy of Fake News, A Critical News Education. Dr. Higdon, I want to start with you. You're really becoming our expert here on American oligarchs. When I was doing research today, the thing that really struck me was how much land Bill Gates is buying, farmland, 270,000 acres so far in the United States. It's staggering. His latest purchase just recently was 2,000 acres in North Dakota, potato farming land. Apparently, the neighbors there are furious. They're upset that he's buying all of this land. What's going on behind the scenes? Why does Bill Gates want all of this farmland?
Well, thank you for having me back in the program. I don't know if I can get inside the head of Gates and say what he plans to do with the land, but I think the fact that he is the largest owner of farmland illustrates that it's not a baseless conspiracy or slippery slope to say that unless stopped, oligarchs will continue to accumulate as much wealth and resource as possible until theoretically there's nothing left for everybody else.
Yeah, I think people think it's freaky. I mean, he's gobbling up land all over the country. In North Dakota, as I mentioned, they're not happy. Even the government officials are getting involved saying, wait a minute, you can't keep buying land. Dana, we sort of have this obsession here with American oligarchs because they have all this power, but they don't want to give us information about them. That's why we're doing the series this week. Last two nights, we've dived into Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos. Musk, we've been told, is approachable to his employees. Bezos has sort of a reputation of being a tyrant. What is it like to work for Bill Gates? What is his management style, Dana?
From what we've really heard, went back when he was running Microsoft full time, he was also a bit of a tyrant in a very kind of the Steve Jobs type of way. He was very combative with any kind of underlings. He didn't even really want to talk to anybody but senior management. He would say things like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You know, these guys don't get to the top by being like Mr. Rogers. You know, they're all kind of rough and they have a certain kind of public image when they're being philanthropists. But, you know, you just can't get to the top by being a nice guy. But, you know, to your point about the farmland, I mean, on one hand, yeah, he's buying up all this farmland. It's got an X-Files Twilight Zone type of vibe to it. We don't know what he's doing there. What's next? Crop circles. But we're also, I'm working on a story about how he's just plunked down $170 million with Saudi Arabia Prince Al-Walid to buy the Palazzo Marini in Rome, right next to the Spanish Steps. And they're going to turn it into a 6-star hotel. And this is part of what we don't know Bill Gates that much, the commercial investor, but he has a top investor back in Seattle who pours money into all hotels and things like that. He's basically the majority owner now of the Four Seasons. So he's got the philanthropy, but he's also got the commercial side and he's got the vaccine side. He was really leading the pandemic in many ways alongside Dr. Fauci, but his legs were kind of cut off with the whole Melinda French divorce and the slightly disturbing Jeffrey Epstein relationship. So we're seeing a little bit less of him as sort of the global ambassador of the pandemic.
Yeah, and let me point out, when he gobbles up all this land, it's not like it says Bill Gates on the deed. He does it under these shell companies, and oftentimes it's very, very hard to sort out and figure out that he's actually the guy in the background. Dr. Higdon, let's talk about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the biggest, if not one of the biggest charities in the world. Obviously, it sounds like they do good work, but is there another side to this? I mean, is this just another power play, or are they really actually trying to do good?
Well, you know, again, if this is a series on oligarchs, I mean, there's a long history of oligarchs in U.S. history who try to operate under the veneer of philanthropy to conceal their rapacious greed. And I think the Gates Foundation is in that tradition. I mean, let's not forget, the foundation was largely created as a PR stunt to distract from his rapacious business models, which were being exposed during an antitrust trial in the late 1990s. So I think that, yes, they do give money to causes that I think a lot of people would advocate for. But the reality is, a lot of that money goes to policy papers and lobbying and ways of him ingratiating himself and influencing lawmakers. And so the proof really needs to be in the outcome. What are the outcomes of this funding? And really what the outcome looks like is it's just a way for Gates to expand his influence and to improve his public image.
Interesting. Dana, let's talk about the divorce. You brought it up a little while ago, the divorce with Melinda. Does Jeffrey Epstein really play a part in this? I thought the interview that Melinda Gates did with Gayle King on CBS was so telling. I mean, I wasn't expecting that when she used those words to describe Bill's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein and basically said, if you want to know more, ask Bill. Do you think that was really part of the reason they got divorced? What was going on behind the scenes?
Well, I think Melinda French is pretty shrewd, and she knew what to say to get the public on her side. I mean, she cut his legs off in that interview. I wouldn't want to be him.
She did. So, oh, she did. Yeah.
Who knows if that, I mean, I'm assuming that the affairs at Microsoft were not really, she wasn't too fond of those either. You know, so you know, Bill has many facets, I think is all we can really say. And who knows what his next facet will be.
Dr. Higdon, it's fascinating. You have written about what you call, quote, a second gilded age highlighted by vast wealth inequality, hyper-partisanship, and a new crop of oligarchs purchasing media and political influence. This certainly applies when you think about Elon Musk and the Twitter purchase, Jeff Bezos owning the Washington Post. How does Bill Gates fit into that equation?
Just like Bezos and Musk, Gates has used his wealth to influence governance. He, you know, directly and indirectly donates to super PACs, the Clinton Foundation. The Gates Foundation creates policy papers and studies that lawmakers then use to devise policy. As I mentioned before, he's spends a lot of money on lobbying as well. And that influential power allows him to shape policy and public perception. To the point where, you know, he's been able to position himself as a expert or intellectual voice on critical issues like pandemics and vaccines and climate change and democracy, even though there's really no evidence to confirm that he's done any research or work to deserve that position. But his wealth buys him that. It buys that influence. It buys his way into all of our policy discussions.
Yeah, Dr. Higdon, it's like with guys like Bill Gates, they're just supposed to know about everything. They can be the expert on everything and tell us what to think, and we're just supposed to believe them because they're so rich. I mean, it doesn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, it's something very corrosive about the culture. You know, we conflate wealth with intellect or value, as if you're wealthy, you somehow need to be the person we need to turn to lead the society. And I think Gates is emblematic of that. He's rich. He took advantage of, you know, government research and weak government policies to stop monopolies. But that's about the extent of how deep Gates goes. And a lot of these other issues, I don't think he necessarily has any more of a voice than it, or should have any more of a voice than anybody else.
Yeah, just fascinating. Dr. Nolan Higdon, Dana Kennedy, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate the conversation.
Thank you.
Okay, coming up, you just booked the perfect Airbnb, but does it come with a hidden C? That stands for camera. A camera that you're not told about that may or may not be legal. Find out what to ask, where to look, and what to do if you find a camera in your hotel or your vacation rental. We're going into it when we come back. If you are flying over the holiday weekend, expect turbulence, but it has nothing to do with weather or fireworks. Long lines, delays, and cancellations, they're pretty much all but guaranteed. And if you don't believe me, Delta is almost begging flyers at this point to change their plans. It's waiving change fees and eating fare differences for all passengers booked between Friday and Monday. There are two conditions. You can't change your route, and also your new trip has to begin no later than July 8th. Do your travel plans include an Airbnb? If so, you might want to cancel that 4th of July party since Airbnb announced a permanent ban on all parties at their properties. Surveillance cameras are a different story. They are not banned. They're allowed, at least in public spaces in Airbnbs. Hidden cameras in private spaces are banned technically, but not all short-term rentals are playing by the rules or by any rules. Somebody besides you enjoying the view in your room and your bathroom. Joining me now is Lisa Guerrero, the chief investigative correspondent for Inside Edition. She's been digging into this. Lisa, I watched your story. You went after that one Airbnb owner. He was revving the engine at you and you didn't back down. I loved that. Yeah, what's going on here? I mean, you talk about a cabin of horrors. How common is this? It's freaky.
Well, you know what? We've been digging in to this subject for a little while. You know, hidden cameras are not a new technology, but what's scary is that lately these spy cams have gotten smaller, more sophisticated, cheaper, and easier to find. I mean, you can order one on Amazon and get one tomorrow. So what we found recently are some of these Airbnb properties, but not just Airbnb properties, other rental properties as well. Some of their hosts have hidden cameras in bedrooms, in bathrooms. As you mentioned, it is not illegal to have a camera as a host at an Airbnb, but that camera has to be in an open space. You have to know about the camera being there. For example, a doorbell, a Ring camera, for example, or a camera in a kitchen or the living room. But you cannot have any hidden cameras in an Airbnb or a rental property. And you certainly can't have any cameras at all in a bedroom, a bathroom, or a room where people sleep. However, we found recent instances of these hosts not only hiding these hidden cameras in bedrooms and bathrooms, but also getting caught themselves on camera while setting them up. One such case took place outside of San Antonio, Texas. There was an Airbnb host who allegedly had a hidden camera in the bedroom of the cabin he was renting out. And the way he was caught was really interesting. A couple was renting this cabin, and as the host, AJ Ali is his name, it's the host came out to show them around the property, he kind of offhandedly mentioned, make sure you get comfortable if you want to watch the sunset naked. If you want to watch the sunset naked, feel free to do so. So the boyfriend thought this was odd. He went into the room, looked around the room, and sure enough, he found something strange. There was an electrical outlet very high up, right across from the bed, with an AC adapter. And he took out that AC adapter, looked at it. He looked at it very carefully with a flashlight, and he saw that there was a lens in the AC adapter. He called the cops. They confiscated Mr. Ali's laptop, and they found over 2,000 images of naked people taken on his property. Crazy, right?
What a nightmare. So, and that was the cabin of horrors, right? That was the one that was called the cabin of horrors.
That was the cabin of horrors, yes. And he now faces invasive visual recording. That is a felony in Texas. And up to a dozen, at least, of his victims are also planning on suing him as well.
Let me tell you, Lisa, I stayed at an Airbnb last month in Atlanta, and there was a camera in the kitchen, which is technically allowed, but it just freaked me out. I mean, I'm paying a couple hundred dollars a night to stay here. I don't even want the camera in the kitchen. It's freaky. Do we have any rights when we book an Airbnb? Can we tell the owner, no, we don't want the camera?
You can, but first and foremost, you have to read the fine print, okay? Because they have to state whether or not there will be a camera in the kitchen or in the living room, for example. But, you know, I spoke to one woman who rented an Airbnb in South Beach. She went on a girls' weekend. There were eight girls in there. They were changing in different rooms. They were walking around the kitchen and the living room, you know, half-dressed. And they ended up finding out that there was a hidden camera in a digital clock in the living room. So you have to be aware of your surroundings. If something doesn't look right, take a close look at it. And certainly if you find a hidden camera, call the police.
Well, that's my thing, like your friend. I mean, even in the kitchen, like if I want to go in the kitchen at 1 a.m. and get a drink in my boxer briefs, It's like freaky. You don't want a camera there. But to give the other side, I've got a buddy who has an Airbnb and he has a camera outside and he rented out. There was a big party and he watched all these people bringing bongs and drugs into his house. So I can also see why the cameras are sometimes necessary. I mean, the owners, if they're used the right way, they can use them to protect themselves.
Absolutely, of course. And that's why, you know, it is really important for the host to reveal where the cameras are and what your expectations are as a renter. Because sometimes it says, you know, we're only renting for a couple or for up to three people. No pets allowed, no parties, et cetera. So there has to be a mutual trust, but certainly hidden cameras are breaking that mutual trust.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's freaky. Lisa, great story. Again, when the guy revved the engine at you, that Airbnb owner, I worried about you, but you stuck around and you got the story on. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks for having me. And I just want to mention that he did plead not guilty and he denies any wrongdoing. So there you go. We'll see what happens
okay.
in court.
Well, we'll see how it plays out. Okay, thanks, Lisa. Okay, coming up, if you want to zip through airport security, wear slip-on shoes, keep your liquids in one bag, don't try to smuggle a 109 live animals in your luggage. What happens when you try that last one? That's coming up next.